All right, Pentecost, Shavuot. Going to start. Find my little rat here. Oh, here it is. With Deuteronomy 16:16, because God commands us to take up an offering three times a year. Now, I never did figure out, and at first, because we were a split off of, this church was a split off of International, you know, they did it seven times a year. But wasn't very long, back in the 80s somewhere, I said, wait a minute, it says, and they'd read sometimes Deuteronomy 16:16, and I'd read, it says three times a year. So that's what we do. Now, some people will be observing that are here will be observing Pentecost next week. So they'll be doing this then, but, and I don't know if you guys, anybody that is going to participate with this, I will pass this around. Oh, or you can put it in the box, whatever, it doesn't matter.
Well, I can leave it blank and fill it
out. No, I'd probably be more conservative than you, so I, you know, not knowing. But there is a box, and we leave the box here for people for weekly offerings, tithes, whatever. But there is three times a year we take up an offering. All right. So let's look at what it actually says. Deuteronomy 16:16. Three times a year, all your males shall appear before the Lord your God in the place which he chooses. At the Feast of Unleavened Bread, at the Feast of Weeks, and at the Feast of Tabernacles, they shall not appear before the Lord empty-handed. Each male shall give as he is able, according to the blessing of the Lord your God, which he has given you. So this is something that's based off of whatever God has done for you or blessed you with. That's what the offering is. So now, let's look at why we're here for today. It's a Sunday. Normally, unless it's a holy day, you know, we're not here. Most holy days, we're not here. We're somewhere else, up in the mountains or down in Florida, whatever. Usually for Pentecost, we're up at Big Ridge State Park. It's a state park about 45 miles from here. And very beautiful up there, cabins and camping. But anyway, Pentecost comes, depending on the when the first day of the first year in the spring is, you know, late May or June, it's 50 days after first fruits. The Hebrew word for Pentecost means 50, and it's the second of the three festival seasons. First one was Passover unleavened bread. Then you have a break, 50 days, and then Pentecost. And then in the fall, you've got the fall holy days. So here's the question. And it still perplexes groups and people and different theories. And when do you keep Pentecost? How do you figure out how to get there? How do you arrive at that date? So I'm going to have a, it should be something super simple. You know, God doesn't make things so complex and so difficult that you got to have a putt or a thud after your name. You know, you got to have years of training and intensive study to figure out these technical aspects. God's calendar and holy days and the weekly Sabbath, it's so simple that children should be able to figure it out. Anybody with even lower than average intelligence, you can still figure out how his system works. But you get these men and they're all educated and trained, and then they, some of them have ulterior motives, and so you got all of these theories out here and all of these different ways to get there. So we're going to have a little Hebrew lesson today. All right? And I will say, and I'll talk just a little bit about it, not much, that there was a controversy in Jesus' time over when you observe Pentecost. And that was the controversy between the Sadducees and the Pharisees. The Pharisees controlled the local synagogues. The Sadducees were the priests, and they controlled the temple and the calendar, because they take the testimony every new month off of the new moon. But there was, once the temple was destroyed, the Sadducees faded into oblivion. No temple, no job. The Pharisees controlled all the synagogues. They were the priests, and they were centered in on the temple, and everything was focused off of the temple. And now, sort of like being a minister today, and there's no congregation. What are you going to do? Go down to McDonald's and flip hamburgers? Or, you know. So, in other words, the Pharisees survived, and they write history, and they count the way that they counted and arrived at Pentecost is the way most Jews do it today. Almost not every Jew, but almost all Jews do. And that's before you even get into worldwide with how did worldwide do it, and some of the split offs, and for a while worldwide kept them on Monday, and you know, all these different ways that men devise things. I want to just look at how God said to do it, and it's really simple, and you don't even have to know Hebrew, because I'm going to explain it to you. Okay? So, in Leviticus 23, what's there? The weekly Sabbath and all of the holy days. That's the one spot, one chapter in the Bible where you can see it all. Now, many other places in the Bible, it talks about those, you know, those individual, but here, Leviticus 23 is where all of God's Sabbaths, plural, weekly and annual, they're all there. Okay, so I'm talking about Leviticus 23 here. There are two words for Sabbath. And I said, you don't have to know Hebrew to understand them. The first one is Strong's 7676, and it's really simple. Even if you just see the shapes of the letter, here's Shabbat. That's Sabbath, okay? There's another word for Sabbath, and they're closely related. You can see these little shapes of the letters, 1, 2, 3. Here you see them again, 1, 2, 3, but then there's more. That's Shabbaton. So, and that's Strong 7677. So what is the difference? And there's some other things like Hashabbat, which is the Sabbath. Whenever you've got the preposition, Hashabbat is the Sabbath. But the actual word itself is Shabbat and Shabbaton. Two different words, okay? Same root. So it means similar, because the root is what really, the root of that is rest. But guess what? Every single time in Leviticus 23 that it talks about the weekly Sabbath, what do you think, which one of these two words does it use? It's 7676, Shabbat. One exception. I know some people here know, but does everybody know what the one exception where Shabbat is used for an annual holy day, where that is? Or what Sabbath it's talking about. I'll tell you. The Day of Atonement. Because on the Day of Atonement, what? Nothing. All the other holy days, you know, whatever work is required to do, it's okay. But on the Day of Atonement, you don't cook, you don't do nothing. It's a day of complete rest. So I understand why God used Shabbat for the Day of Atonement. So, but every other single holy day, Passover, unleavened bread, first and last day, Pentecost, trumpets, not atonement, but first and last day, or first day of tabernacles, and then the eighth day, the last day, day number eight, that's a Shabbaton again. So it differentiates, okay? Why is that important? Who even cares? Why should you care? Well, I'm going to explain it to you here. And I put it up there. There's two words for Sabbath. That's Shabbat, 7676. Without the Day of Atonement, you know, okay, so went through that. What's it matter? Because that's, the instructions are, how do we get to Pentecost? Okay? Next slide. Leviticus 23, 5 through 8. I don't have it up there, but in verses 5 through 8, it tells us to observe Passover and the days of unleavened bread for 7 days. And then in Leviticus 23, 10, 10 and 11, it tells us to do something during those days of unleavened bread. And that's what I want to look at. In Leviticus 23:10, it says, "Speak to the children of Israel and say to them, when you come into the land which I give to you and reap its harvest, then you shall bring a sheaf of the first fruits of your harvest to the priest. And he shall wave the sheaf before the Lord to be accepted on your behalf on the day after the Sabbath, after the Shabbat." Not Shabbaton, Shabbat. The priest shall wave it. So, I got a typo. It's 7676, not 3. But anyway, the Pharisees start counting because Passover is a high day. It's a Sabbath. And Passover, you're sitting down, you're eating it, and the first day of unleavened bread, they start counting after that day. So to kind of give an example, if that is a Tuesday, that's Nisan or Abib 15. Okay? So the day after that is the 16th. So they will start counting on the 16th day of the first month. They count 50 days. It doesn't matter what day of the week you get to. And they say, oh, this is Shavuot or Pentecost. Could be Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday, whatever. Doesn't matter. The Sadducees, the priests, said, no. We start counting from the day after the Shabbat, not the day after the Shabbaton. So they start counting from the day after the weekly Sabbath that falls during the days of unleavened bread, meaning Pentecost is always on a Sunday. 50 days, you know, Sunday is day one, you count 50 days, 50 days later you get to another Sunday, and there is the disagreement and the argument between the Sadducees and the Pharisees. Pretty much got along on almost every other important thing, except the resurrection and the dead, you know, which is kind of important, I guess, if you think about it. But, you know, as far as setting the holy days and how that works, they agreed on everything else, except for Pentecost. And there were some fierce disagreements. And in history, you can read about it. And they literally took up arms against one another over this subject more than once. But and today, because of changing the calendar and fixing it, you know, having a fixed day of number of days in each month, they always keep Pentecost on Sivan 6. But today would be, excuse me, it's not Sivan 6 today. Today it's Sivan 5. Okay? So guess what day Jews are going to keep Pentecost? Tomorrow, Monday, this year. But anyhow, probably more information than everybody wants. But it's important to know when you count from. The other thing I want to bring up is it tells you to count. It's the only holy day that you count to get there. And the reason it tells you to count is it's not a fixed calendar date. Every other day on the 14th day of the first month at evening, you know, in the fall, on the first day of the seventh month, on the 10th day of the seventh month, on the 15th day of the seventh month, on the, you know, it lists them. 22nd day of the seventh month, it lists them by number, a fixed date. Pentecost is the only one that doesn't have a fixed date, because you got to determine the day of the wave sheaf offering, and then from there you count 50 days. And that's how you get to Pentecost. It's done specifically for a very special reason. Because if it was a fixed day, if it was Sivan 6, it would just say on the sixth day of the third month, like all the other holy days. So there's multiple reasons why the way the Jews do it today are faulty and wrong. And there's a lot of people that just follow the traditions of the Jews. Just because they do it doesn't mean it's right. It doesn't mean it's automatically wrong. You know, they keep the Sabbath on the right day of the week, but you just don't follow blindly. You gotta, maybe when you're first starting out and you don't know any better, but you gotta study and you gotta see what God says. So why is all this important? Why don't all of the other Sabbath groups teach us? Some do to some extent, some the other. I'm not gonna get into all the reasons why they don't talk about it or teach at all. But let's look at John chapter 20. Verse 11. Because all these things point to Jesus, or Yeshua. It was the day that he presented himself as the first of the harvest. He was the first to be resurrected. You know, even the Sunday Baptists and Methodists and everything, they understand, oh, Jesus is the Lamb of God. He was the Passover Lamb. A lot in the church don't even understand because of their hang-ups of nothing good can happen on Sunday or whatever their motivations and their reason are, that the wave sheaf pointed to Jesus also. He was the wave sheaf. He was the first of the harvest, the first of many to come, the first of the first fruits to be used for the wave sheaf. In John chapter 20, verse 11, it says, "But Mary stood outside the tomb weeping. And as she wept, she stooped down and looked into the tomb. And she saw two angels in white sitting, one at the head and the other at the feet, where the body of Jesus had lain. And they said to her, 'Woman, why are you weeping?' And she said to them, 'Because they have taken away my Lord, and I do not know where they have laid him.' Now when she had said this, she turned and saw Jesus standing there and did not know that it was Jesus. Jesus said to her, 'Woman, why are you weeping? Whom are you seeking?' She supposed him to be the gardener and said to him, 'Sir, if you have carried him away, tell me where you have laid him and I will take him away.' And Jesus said to her, 'Mary.' And she turned and said to him, 'Rabboni,' which is to say, 'Teacher.' Jesus said to her, 'Do not,'" there's a reason he said this, I'll talk about it a little bit, "'Do not cling to me, for I have not yet ascended to my Father. But go to my brethren and say to them, I am ascending to my Father and your Father, and to my God and your God.'" So what's going on here? And why is this important? You turn to it in my Bible for a second. That's why. Exactly why. So I'm not the only one that's looked at this and studied this. Chapter 20, 17. All right. Why couldn't she touch him? Why did he tell her, "Hey, don't touch me"? And then say, "For I have not yet ascended to my Father." Let me give you a hint. Who was Jesus? I mean, his role. He was the high priest. What laws did Jesus change? What ones did he abolish or change or say we don't need to observe these, we don't need to keep them? Which ones? None. Zero. Zip. Who was it that waved that wave sheaf of the harvest before God? Who physically had it in their hands and waved it? The high priest. Okay. What did Jesus represent? That wave, that Omer of barley is the very first of the whole harvest. He himself, his own body, was the first from the resurrection, the first from the dead. He presented himself before his Father. True. I believe he also had an omer of barley in his hand. Maybe that's why she thought he was a gardener. Maybe he had a sickle in one hand of barley. That's conjecture. It's one of the questions I'm going to ask him. But she didn't recognize that he was who he was. It says she thinks he's the gardener. But all of the laws of the high priest, he had to observe. Because he didn't abolish or change any of them. So nobody could touch the high priest. Why? Because if they were ritually impure or unclean for some reason, even if they didn't know and they came in contact with the high priest, that would render the high priest ritually impure or unclean, and he couldn't carry out the priestly functions. That's why Jesus tells her, "Don't touch me." Later that day, when he appears in front of the apostles and everything, and, you know, Doubting Thomas is there, and among others, and he says, "It's me. Here's the holes in my body. Touch me. It's me. It's perfectly okay to come in contact and touch them then, but not before," because he says himself that he has not yet ascended to his Father. That's why. So even this wave sheaf, which the Jews don't celebrate today, and I asked the rabbi about it. He says, "Well, there's no temple." And, well, yeah, but there's no temple and you're keeping Days of Unleavened Bread. There's no temple and you're keeping Yom Kippur, you know, Day of Atonement, all the other things you keep, but you don't even acknowledge the wave sheaf offering during the Days of Unleavened Bread. But anyhow, it's important. It points to Jesus, and that's how you get there. Just like every other holy days and everything else all points to him, so does this wave sheaf also. Now, once we've established when to have the wave sheaf offering, it's on the day after the weekly Sabbath, during the Days of Unleavened Bread. After the weekly Sabbath, we have to count 50 days. And it's not, like I said earlier, it's not fixed. It's not a sixth day of the third month or anything like that. Now, Leviticus 23:15, it says, "And you shall count for yourselves from the day after the Sabbath," the Shabbat, not the Shabbaton, "from the day that you brought the sheaf of the wave offering, seven Sabbaths," seven weekly Shabbats, "shall be completed. Count 50 days to the day after the seventh Shabbat," or Saturday Sabbath, "and you shall offer a new grain offering to the Lord." And there you go, there's Pentecost. And that's why Pentecost is observed on Sunday, and people that keep the Sabbath in the holy days do it. Some follow the Jewish tradition and do it on 7-6, but that's nonsense. That's not right. In today's world, I want to take just a minute. You know, it talks in Leviticus 23 over and over. Different translations say it differently a little bit, but it basically talks about a holy convocation. Over and over and over, it talks about a holy convocation. And what does that mean? It's a set time. It's an appointment. It's like we all have a appointment with God this day. Clear out your calendar. It's this day. Pentecost is a holy day. It's a holy convocation. So let's look in Leviticus 23, verse 17 starts. It says, "You shall bring from your dwelling two wave loaves of 2/10 of an ephah. They shall be of fine flour. They shall be baked with leaven. They are the first fruits to the Lord. And you shall offer with the bread seven lambs of the first year without blemish, one young bull and two rams. And they shall be as a burnt offering to the Lord, and their grain offering and their drink offering, an offering made by fire for a sweet aroma to the Lord. Then you shall sacrifice one kid of the goats as a sin offering, and two male lambs of the first year as a sacrifice of a peace offering." I'm going to check that air conditioner.
That's better.
Okay. The end of verse 19. Pick it up in verse 20. Leviticus 23:20. The priest shall wave them with the bread of the first fruits as a wave offering before the Lord with the two lambs. They shall be holy to the Lord for the priest. And you shall proclaim, here's the important part, and you shall proclaim on the same day that it is a holy convocation to you. You shall do no customary work on it. It shall be a statute forever in all your dwellings throughout your generations. So this is forever. Tell people, has forever come and gone? No. It's not come and gone. It's still there. So a lot of people don't understand, like you have groups like, in general, the Seventh-day Adventists, they keep the weekly Sabbath, but they don't keep the holy day Sabbaths. They'll actually, some of them will actually tell you that forever doesn't mean forever. I've had a Seventh-day Adventist minister tell me that. But he's confused, deceived. But here's the best way in our society today that I can explain it. Holy convocation. You've got the judge of the entire universe, the world, and all creation and everything in it. And he has said, these are set times, these are holy convocations, clear out your calendars, this is reserved for me. He has actually issued a subpoena to each and every one of us to appear before him. A lot of people can understand that. I ask them, I say, what do you do if a judge issues a subpoena and he names you in the subpoena and he says, on this day, you will appear before me? Are you going to ignore it? If you don't do it, there is a penalty. Now, if you're mentally retarded and you don't understand, you know, the penalty is different. He'll just make sure that the bailiff goes and gets you and brings you because you can't comprehend it. So there's some people that ignore the subpoena and they're spiritually, they're mentally retarded, okay? But those that understand it and those that know and choose not to do it, well, I'm busy. The kids have a game at school today or, you know, there's a choir practice or, for the school choir or the opera or the show is playing or my boss asked me to work today, told me I had to work or whatever the excuse is. You can't ignore the subpoena from the supreme judge of the entire creation. He says, do it. We better figure out when you're supposed to do it. And that's why, even though I wish it wasn't, I won't talk about the timing on Passover right before Passover. I refuse. I won't talk about a calendar issue, like Jewish calendar versus God's calendar, whatever, right before a holy day. It's not fair and honest to put, you got to make the decision, you got to figure it out, you got to do it, you got to do it, you got to do it, you got to do it now. And if it's too late, you've done it wrong and you've missed it. And it's too, you know, like a car, used car salesman or a new car salesman. You know, this is the deal today. If you walk off that slot, the deal's over. It's like, I'm giving you these discounts on this sale, and this is this one-time only offer. It's only good now. You sign right here on a dotted line, and if not, you're out. It's over. Even if I think it's a good deal, I'll walk away from them deals because that's not honest, that kind of pressure. So I don't do that with things like the calendar or something. But it's important. There is one correct time. And that's why I feel that everybody, no matter which side of whatever you're on, you need to look at it and make sure that you're still secure in everything that you've decided. Pray and ask God to show you, and then do what God tells you to do. And have enough love and respect to love and respect somebody else that doesn't see it exactly the same way. Like I got a guy that had told me 20 years ago he couldn't keep Feast of Tabernacles with us because we didn't agree on the timing of Passover. And I said, what does that got to do with the Feast of Tabernacles? He kept it 24 hours earlier than I was keeping it, and he knew it. And he knew that there was people that were doing it both ways that were there at the Feast of Tabernacles. And he told me, he said, nope, we can't agree on that, so we can't have fellowship together. And I thought, boy, that's really, are you saying this because you're so insecure in what you have come to a conclusion that you don't want to hear anything else because you can't explain or defend or whatever? Not defend isn't the right word, but, you know, you just don't want to hear nothing else. Like a little kid that plugs his ears and closes his eyes and goes, la, 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 you know. I don't want to hear it. So, okay, we're friends up until then. But today's world, we all need to study and show ourselves approved. You know, and do everything we can possibly do and leave the rest up to God. Okay, now notice what it says next. After verse 22, it says, when you reap the harvest of your land, you shall not wholly reap the corners of your field when you reap, nor shall you gather any gleaning from your harvest. You shall leave them for the poor and for the stranger. I am the Lord your God. And a lot of people think, well, where is this coming from? You're just talking about Pentecost here and what you do it, and you get into such detail about two loaves of bread and you know, land, a fine flour and a drink offering and a kid of the goats, and you get into all of this detail, and then out of nowhere you throw in, don't reap the corners of your land. What?
Yeah, don't back in the corner.
Like, yeah, don't, like John says, don't back the tractor in the corner and get all of that. It belongs here. It belongs here. It's not a mistake. It's not out of left field. This is talking about a holy day, right? This is God even providing for those that don't have their own harvest. Say, if we get up there, what are we going to do? Are we going to have anything to eat? How are we going to do it? Go on out and go into the corners and glean. If it's a, you know, it doesn't matter if it's an orchard or a vineyard or a field or whatever. God provides for the poor and the stranger, those that don't have money. It's one of the ways that he provides for everybody to observe it. And that's really what that law is about. And some of you I've talked to, Mary and I were dirt poor. And there was a farmer up in Wisconsin that let people do that. And we would drive our car out into his field and, you know, potato fields. In the fall, one year we're out there, we would bring home trunk loads of potatoes. And we had mashed potatoes. And we had baked potatoes. And we cut them up into chips. And we'd have fry them, and we'd have fried potato chips, and you know, and anything else that we could use potatoes as an ingredient in, she was using, because we weren't on welfare and food stamps and all of this. We made potato chips. We made anything. I had potatoes till potatoes were coming out my eyes. But I'm so glad that he did that. Now he didn't go out and harvest them and bag them all up and say, you know, you want me to deliver them to your house? But because of what it said here, he would, you know, his potato harvester, it would miss some in the field. So first we'd hit the corners and we'd get all the, go out there with pitchforks and we'd get all the potatoes out of the corner. And then we'd go out and whatever the harvester missed, and some of them it would split open or break in half or whatever. And we'd get them, and we'd eat them first, and then the rest of them, we had a basement in our house. We'd put them down where it was cool and store up some potatoes. Yeah.
The same way with the farmer. I mean, like John, you know, he planted corn and beans and rotated. Well, you know, who's going to come out? They're not going to come and get the beans or the corn or whatever. But then you let your cattle out there.
And the cattle take care of it, yeah.
And, yep. They
go into the corners, they
know where to go.
Yeah.
They're taking from the harvest.
And while they're out there eating in, they're fertilizing at the same time?
And if you can't do that, like with him farming corn, you know, corn and beans, like not a vegetable gardener, you know, or trees or anything that you can get to feed people, then we should be able to help them other ways, you know,
right.
by, you know, selling some grain and, you know, giving them a tax donation.
Correct. If it's a widow, older, and or somebody that's got a physical disability where they can't go out and reap in the corners and that, you go out and do it, and you deliver that if that's what it takes. But
like the tithe, we can't just go, well, he doesn't do it now, you know, but when he did it, we couldn't just go and say wherever we were at, you know, whatever church, you know, we were participating. We couldn't just take and say, okay, here's a truckload of corn.
Right.
And say, really,
you could sell it and then take that money, and yeah, if you dumped a dump truck full of grain in their parking lot, they'd be kind of ticked off at you. Yeah, yeah. But like one of the people, like Frank Zimlicka, he had cattle and that, and he would sometimes, that's what they'd slaughter a cow, and that's what they'd have to eat when they went, you know, they were in worldwide in that, and then they'd give some of the meat to some others that were in need and hungry, and sometimes, you know, he didn't have the cash, so you'd sell some of your livestock, and then that paid for the trip to get there, but it was all tithe. But yeah, you got to use some common sense and some reasoning with it.
You can't leave the land till where there's nothing left, because it's not going to produce anything then. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like he would say, oh, you got to put this much fertilizer and this much fertilizer.
If you rape the land, you're a mighty poor farmer.
Yeah. And I don't think that's...
All right. Next slide, Exodus 19. The first great event on this day was the giving of the Torah, the law. The first Pentecost for Israel. Now, I think these all go back to creation. Just like Sabbath goes to creation, I think all the holy days go back to creation. But the first one for the children of Israel, Exodus 19, verse 1. It says, in the third month, after the children of Israel had gone out of the land of Egypt, on the same day that they came to the wilderness of Sinai, for they had departed from Rephidim and had come to the mountain wilderness of Sinai and had camped in the wilderness, so Israel camped there before the mountain. And Moses went up to God, and the Lord called to him from the mountain, saying, thus you shall say to the house of Jacob and tell the children of Israel, you have seen what I did to the Egyptians and how I bore you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. Now, therefore, if you will indeed obey my voice and keep my covenant. So this is a conditional thing. If you will indeed obey my voice and keep my covenant, then you shall be a special treasure to me above all people, for all the earth is mine. So God's making a offering to them, a covenant, a deal. So Moses tells the people that they're supposed to prepare themselves for this event. Look at what happened after 3 days of preparation on Pentecost. Exodus 19:6, it says, then it came to pass on the third day in the morning that there were thunderings and lightning and a thick cloud on the mountain. And the sound of the trumpet was very loud, so that all the people who were in the camp trembled. And Moses brought the people out of the camp to meet with God. And they stood at the foot of the mountain. Now Mount Sinai was completely in smoke, because the Lord had descended upon it in fire. So kind of try and picture this. Its smoke ascended like the smoke of a furnace, and the whole mountain quaked greatly. And when the blast of the trumpet sounded long and became louder and louder, Moses spoke, and God answered him by voice. So see what's coming in. This fire comes down and descends on the mountain, and there's this smoke going on, but the whole mountain is quaking. It's shaking. Now, I don't, if I ever asked, I don't remember, but I've been where there's tornadoes. You know, they say it sounds like a freight train. Yeah. I've been to within about 100, 150 yards of a tornado. I saw it coming, and I'm wondering, which way do I run? How do I get out of here? And you can hear it. It sounds like a train. And you can feel the ground shaking and vibrating like when the train goes past. So you got this. But on top of that, they've got this fire coming down. And it says, God answered him by voice. Now, here's one of the things where I think maybe the Jews are telling the truth on this. They say that when God spoke, there were 70 known languages of the day. And when he spoke, you had not just Israel, but you had the mixed multitude that came out of Egypt with them. And there was some from every, that spoke every language that there was. But God spoke universally and everybody heard it in their known native language. So it was complete understanding whatever, like, you know, Israel would hear it in Romanian because he's very good in English and Arthur is good in English, but that's the native language. And it was a miracle that took place. And then think about, we'll talk about it a little later, what happened in Acts chapter 2. We're going to go to Acts chapter 2. It was a repeat of what happens here in Exodus 19. In the hearing, yes. Wasn't gobbledygook and people flopping around on the ground. It was in the hearing. But it was also on Pentecost. What's Moses up there? It was on Pentecost that God gave Moses the law. In the 70 languages. In universal. It's for everybody. All God's law is for everybody. What's it say over and over? It says, for you and the stranger that dwells among you. So you were a Gentile and you were somebody that wasn't an Israelite. If you were there with God and you're going to worship him, it's universal for everybody. None of this nonsense, well, that's for the Jews and I'm a Gentile and all these loopholes. But when Moses comes down from the mountain with the law, what did he find? What did he see? What happens? Obviously, the marriage was off to a rocky start because literally it was, you know, God was the bridegroom and Israel was the bride. And they're down there committing adultery against him, spiritual adultery against him. And in fact, if you go through the Torah and you look, you got to go to chapter 32 because it's out of sequence to see literally, physically what happens. So in Exodus 32, starting in verse 19, it says, so it was as soon as he came near the camp that he saw the calf and the dancing. So Moses' anger became hot and he cast the tablets out of his hands and broke them at the foot of the mountain. Yeah, Moses lost his temper like, are you guys nuts? I'm up here talking to God, getting the instructions, and you're down here doing this? After you've said all that the Lord has said we will do? Are you crazy? Are you mashugana? What's going on here? So this was the punishment. Picking it up. 32 verse 26. Then Moses stood at the entrance of the camp and said, whoever is on the Lord's side, come to me. And all the sons of Levi gathered themselves together to him. And he said to them, thus says the Lord God of Israel, let every man put his sword on his side and go in and out from the entrance to entrance throughout the camp, and let every man kill his brother, every man his companion, and every man his neighbor. Think literally what God had Moses tell him. So the sons of Levi did according to the word of Moses. And about 3,000 men of the people fell that day. So just keep that number in your head. 3,000 of them, the Levites, killed with a sword that day because of their adultery that they had committed against God. They lost their lives because of it, because of their sins. The pagan terrible acts that they were doing. Now, let's look what happens. in Acts chapter 2, Pentecost. You can disagree with me, but Pentecost, 30 AD. This is the second great, there's many Pentecosts in between, but this is the second great event where this happens again. The disciples knew that Jesus had promised to send, he said, I'll send you the Comforter, okay? So they knew something was coming up. They saw that he was sacrificed when the Passover lamb was sacrificed. He was buried at the start, just in time before the start of the first day of unleavened bread. You know, he said his body was like a kernel of wheat. You put it in the ground, it looks dead, looks like there's nothing there. But out of there comes new life. He's resurrected. He presents himself as the wave sheaf offering on the correct day for that. He's done everything. It's not too big of a stretch to say, I wonder what's going to happen now. Then here comes, you know, he's crucified for Passover. The timing is exactly the way it should be. And now, Acts chapter 2, verse 1. I told you a little bit about the controversy. When is Pentecost really? Look at the wording of this. I don't think this is a coincidence either. Acts chapter 2, verse 1, it says, when the day of Pentecost had fully come. In other words, the real day, the correct time. There's a disagreement. When did we do it? But I'm going to just say, on the real Pentecost. Okay? They were all with one accord in one place. And suddenly there came a sound from heaven as of a rushing mighty wind. And it filled the whole house where they were sitting. And then there appeared to them divided tongues as of fire, and they sat on each one of them. This is a repeat of exactly what we read back in Exodus that happened at the first great Pentecost event with the house of Israel. Verse 4, and they were all filled with the Holy Spirit and began to speak with other tongues as the Spirit gave them utterance. And they were there dwelling in Jerusalem, Jews, devout men from every nation under heaven. And when this sound occurred, the multitude came together and were confused because everyone heard them speak in his own language. So here the apostles are up there speaking, but if whatever your native language is, you're hearing what they say. You know, a good example would be if all of a sudden I'm speaking in English, that's my native language, and you guys, if it's yours, you're hearing it. But Arthur and Israel, they're hearing me in Romanian. That is a miracle. I'm not up there gobbledygook and gibberish. The miracle is in they hear in their own language what I'm saying. God causes that, and it's a repeat. Okay? Now let's go on. Verse 36. Then Peter begins his sermon. He says, therefore let all the house of Israel know assuredly that God has made this Jesus, whom you crucified, both Lord and Christ. And when they heard this, they were cut to the heart. And Peter said to the rest of the apostles, men and brethren, what shall we do? Then Peter said to them, repent, every one of you, to be baptized in the name of Jesus Christ for the remission of sins, and you shall receive the gift of the Holy Spirit. For the promise is to you and to your children and to all who are far off, as many as the Lord our God will call. And with many other words he testified and exhorted them, saying, be saved from this perverse generation. Then those who gladly received his word were baptized. And that day, about 3,000 souls were added to them. The exact same number as lost it on the first Pentecost are gained on the second one. Just a coincidence, right? Same exact day. You got the sound, the fire, the quaking, the trembling. Then the 70 known languages then, and you've got the same thing in Acts chapter 2 all over again. And it's like God restoring what was lost. Down to the number.
That's why numbers are so important in the Bible.
He's a mathematical genius, and everything is done. It's like his brain is, you know, I was going to say a computer, but a computer does, don't even start to compare. All right. So, how did God say that we're supposed to be identified? Let's go back to Exodus 31, verse 12. And it says, "And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, Speak to the children of Israel, saying, Surely my Sabbaths, plural, you shall keep. For it is a sign between me and you throughout your generations, that you may know that I am the Lord who sanctifies you." It's plural in Hebrew, it's plural in English. I don't know about other languages, but it's not only the weekly Sabbath, but also the annual Sabbath. And that's what identifies God's people. So if we're identified, what's offered to us? John 14:15 says, "If you love me, keep my commandments. And I will pray the Father, and he will give you another helper." That's Strong's 38:75. "And he may that he may abide with you forever. The Spirit of truth, whom the world cannot receive, because it neither sees him nor knows him, but you know him, for he dwells with you and will be in you. I will not leave you orphans, I will come to you." It basically, it means a comforter, an intercessor, someone to watch over you, to take care of you, to help you. God's Holy Spirit, that's what he's talking about. And he gives it to those that keep his commandments, but not just keep all the commandments, but why? There's a caveat attached to it. Because you love them. I know people that they might keep the Sabbath or they might keep holy days, but they don't keep any of the commandments about loving your brother, and they are the most hateful, mean, awful people. I don't like to be around them. You got to keep all of his commandments. And if you're doing it because of love, what if you keep some of them and ignore some of them? You can't. Which ones can you say, not for me? That's dumb. That's stupid. I ain't doing it. That gets me in a lot of trouble. And that turns a lot of people off. But it is the truth. I'm sorry. It's not like we were talking about a buffet. You know, you went to a buffet, what, two nights ago, Friday night, before sundown. And if you took the buffet, you'd say, oh, I like steaks, and pile up on steaks. If you're a vegetarian, you say, well, I don't eat meat, so I'm going to walk past the chicken, and I'm going to walk past the fish, and I'm going to walk past the steaks, and I'm going to get some nice vegetables and a salad, and you're going to load up on that, and you can have some fresh fruit. And it's good if you have the vegetable salad and the fruit with your steaks, but, you know, but you, and then you walk past and somebody walks past and they say, ew, broccoli. I don't like broccoli. So they skip it. You can't do that with some of God's laws because you don't like them. Or you say, ooh, asparagus. That's going to make my peas stink. I don't want asparagus. You don't do that with God's laws. I don't care what the motivation or what the reasoning or what it is behind it. If God says do it, you do it. If he says don't do it, you do it. And some people say, oh, fat, Leviticus 3 and Leviticus 7. But I like fat burgers. I like, and all the fat just dissolves when you cook it on the grill anyhow. I'm just going to ignore that one. You don't pick and choose. And say, oh, I love polyester. I'm not going to get 60% cotton, 40% polyester. I'm going to get 100% polyester because that's my favorite. It doesn't matter what it is. Doesn't matter. Think about what happened that day. The disciples knew that Jesus promised to send the Holy Spirit. They had also seen him act on every, you know, like I said, Passover, everything happens at the correct time. He's crucified on Passover, buried on unleavened bread, rises on first fruit. It wasn't crazy to expect something. And it tells you when the day had fully come. So when people say, well, that's all done away with. And that's for the Jews and not us, not the Christians. They say, for 3,500 years, he was showing both houses of the house of Israel and the house of Judah, 3,500 years. This is what it's all about. So when his son comes along, you can see this is all about him. We've done this for 3,500 years, and now here he is. It's all about Jesus or Yeshua. It's nothing to do with anything else. It's all the shadow that leads to him, not away from him. And that's why we're supposed to keep this forever, throughout all of our generations, if we love him. That's got to be the motivation.